Meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 3, String Contention, Objections, and Disputes, held on the 17th of January, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Robin Gross. Please begin.
Thank you very much. Hi, and thanks for everyone who was able to join in today's call. Let me quickly review the agenda over SOIs, and we'll have an update from the full working group. Jeff's on the call for that. We've got a proposed work track 3 work plan and discussion schedule to discuss. Also, we'd also like to pick up some of the more substantive discussions from where we were last time, and in particular, the review of all new GTLD objections, reminding folks to take a look at the statistics and the analysis, and Steve has got some new analysis for discussion. And then we can recap the positioning on the limited public interest objections. Is the content and function for the purpose of the policy stated in the applicant guidebook? Are there needs with respect to future implementation? There was the issue of ALAC standing. We were discussing whether or not that process invites lobbying from third parties. And then we've got the legal rights objections discussion after that. And we can pick up the review of the WIPO and the inter reports on the legal rights objections, and then the confirmation of our next meeting next month. So that's our, and then any other business. So was there any comments or questions on the agenda proposals on that? Okay, I don't see any hands or hear any voices, so I will go forward until I see one of those two things. Okay, so is there anybody who would like to update their statements of interest? If so, now is the time to do that. Please raise your hand or jump into the call. Okay. Looks like we're good on the statements of interest. Next on our agenda is an update from the full plenary working group, and we've got both Jeff and Avery on the call today, and I believe Jeff has agreed to update us on the full plenary. So, Jeff, can I hand it over to you?
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman, and I'll assume since my mic is moving and it says I'm speaking, that you all can hear me. So the update from the full working group, last week we had a meeting of the full working group where we went over some initial conclusions from the public, or say CC1, enough for us to get a good outline for the initial report. I misplace the terminology, but it's the initial report. We also agreed to give a week for comments on next steps forward with respect to two different areas. One was the setting up a drafting team on working on a matrix to analyze the different types of categories and some sub-questions with respect to those categories and differentiation. And a second work team that was also set up to look at how we could structure a round versus the hybrid approach that we had been talking about. And to date, there have been no comments objecting to that setting up those drafting teams. So this week we'll work on a hopefully get out by the end of the week a call for members for these two drafting teams. The other update is that WorkTrack 4 will, I believe, meet this week as well. And then we have a week off due to a couple different events going on next week, one being NamesCon, where some of us will be there, and the second one being a policy retreat for all of the ICANN policy personnel that they'll be getting their annual retreat and plan. So we're skipping meetings next week, but the following week we will start again with the full group and then work tracks 1 and 2. Other than that, I think every work track is working on their timeline. And you'll see some of that here as well. And hopefully we'll get a good concrete work plan out very shortly. So I think, Robin, that's it. That's the update.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Jeff. Does anyone have any comments or any questions for Jeff? Okay, well, I don't see any hands or hear any voices, so I guess that means no. Thanks again, Jeff. Appreciate that. Let's go forward with our agenda. And next, we've got our proposed work track 3 detailed work. We were asked by the co-chairs to come up with an overall plan for moving the substance of our discussions forward in somewhat of a more detailed agenda. And so this is what we've got to propose. And I wanted to ask Karen if she wanted to specifically speak on this, or if you're happy for me to talk to this particular work item.
Hi, this, everybody. This is Karen. I will just speak in broad terms what I've pulled together here. Basically, it was assuming that we would sign off on our LPI consensus as preliminary consensus tonight, so that would be complete. The other dates are slightly adjusted, but again, keeping our overall conclusion around the end of April mark, as the whole work track is full work group is trying to wrap up our tracks by then. But as you can see, we've got quite a bit to do. So I guess we need to really ramp up our work on the list or decide to put in some more time on the phone. And so that's where we are. Robin, please add anything else, any other thoughts?
Thanks so much for this proposal too. My only thoughts are, you know, we've got so much work to do and not a lot of time to do it, and we don't have a ton of participation, either on the list or in these calls, so I'm wondering if folks had maybe some ideas or if there were any suggestions about maybe how we could sort of really get people to zero in on some of this stuff. And you know, I understand this is a sort of a system-wide problem we've got in ICANN policy development right now, but I sure would welcome any views or suggestions on you know, how we can make this as manageable and as feasible as possible given the timeline that we've got and the amount of work that we've got to cover, and you know, where we sort of are on the participation scale. Anybody want to weigh in on that? Yes, please, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. This is Jeff Newman. You know, I think a lot of these, a lot of this work, especially with objections, really the best possible feedback we can get would be from those that lived through them, either from the filing perspective or the responding perspective, or even in some cases, neither filing or responding, but indirectly being impacted by objections that were filed. I think for objections especially, the development of pointed questions, either as part of CC2 or even separately sent to those that were involved in the objections, may be the best way to get the best type of feedback. You know, I know that there are a couple people on this call that were involved in a number of different types of objections, and for whatever reason, not comfortable speaking on this call or even on email lists, but may be more receptive if they receive a list of questions, because I think they have the most valuable feedback on how to improve the process.
I see Cheryl Lane Denore's got a green tick with what you're saying there, so I appreciate that. Anybody else have any thoughts on this? Shall we go forward with this proposal? We've got a lot of work to do. Try to reach out to our fellow constituent members and other participants in the ICANN community and say, you know, look, I know you're really busy with these other working groups, but this one's really important too, and we've got a very short and discrete period of time coming up here in the next few months, and so if you can lend some cycles, we'd really appreciate it. Okay. Anybody else have anything to say on this? On our proposed work track. Otherwise, I think we go forward with it as it stands. Jeff, is that a new hand?
Yeah, I was just thinking, just rethinking of the proposal I made, and you know, submission of written questions can often be a lot of work for those that receive the written questions. Perhaps we can send a list of questions out, and then call some of the parties that, you know, were either the filers or the, you know, we could in theory do kind of an interview style with the questions, and maybe if they agree to record those or if not, they want it more anonymous, we can, you know, do that as well. I just don't want to create a ton of, I think a lot of people don't respond to questionnaires because it is a lot of work, and they want to word it, you know, exactly right. And perhaps it's kind of a mix of interview questions as well as the written ones. Thanks.
Thank you. No, I agree that to the extent that we can make this as accessible and as easy and as simple for the participants in that process is possible, I think the better, because, you know, they have the data that we need, and, you know, some have to figure out a way to pull that data out of their heads and, you know, get it in front of us so we can think about how it impacts these rules going forward. So I really like that idea, actually, and I think, you know, we should look to try to do something, you know, along these lines that reaches out to the people who actually participated in these processes and asks them specifically in a very easy, accessible, maybe survey way, how we can improve it going forward. Anyone else have any thoughts on this? I see in the chat here, Jess says, should we create a small drafting team to work on the questions? That's probably a very good idea. And we've also got a queue forming. Okay, first is Cheryl Langdonor. Please, Cheryl.
Thanks, Robin. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. That's an intriguing idea, Jeff. Just thinking out loud here, that's something that could indeed be quite useful, especially if we're up front with that methodology. You know, doing the preamble, it says, we value your time, we realize it's often limited, therefore, we would like to offer you the alternative of blah, 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 blah. And then as long as the interviews still go through the same sets of questions, at least at a high level, that could, in fact, shake a lot more information out of the tree. I know from my point of view, if I've got 45 minutes, which is probably all an interview was going to take, I'm very likely to stuff something else in that time. I'll accept an interview for that time. But in the absence of the interview, I'm very likely to stuff something else in that time because I think, oh, you know, it'll take me a bit longer to do this, that and the other. So that off-the-cuff opportunity, and then they have it as a sort of a primer, the set of questions, could be a very interesting methodology to explore. I shall watch this space.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Cheryl. I note in the chat, Christina Rosette has said one option would be to hold an open house during Copenhagen, during which folks with experience with objections could drop in and provide whatever they want. And Jeff says that's a great idea if they're willing to share experiences in an open environment. So, yeah, I think that's a really good idea, too. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of those people all in one place, and asking them to have a quick focused discussion on that is probably a very good idea. Did anybody else want to weigh in on this issue? Okay, I don't see or hear anyone. So let's go forward with the agenda. Okay, so we've got reminder that there are the statistics of all the overall objections, how those turned out, that are on our WorkTracks wiki page, ICANN wiki page. And I also wanted to raise that Steve has started a new analysis for us about how some of these objections actually turned out. I know in the past we've said it'd be great if we could have some real comprehensive analysis done on the all of the different objections and how they came out, and see if we can try to look at some trends or you know, something from sort of a statistical perspective that isn't only our own individual anecdotal experience. So this is still pretty early in the thinking on this, but I think it's worth talking about sort of what has started and what might we do with this and where might it go. So let me just turn it over to Steve, and if Steve could sort of tell us what they're working on in terms of the staff analysis and what his thoughts are on this, I think that'd be really helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Robin. This is Steve from staff. So just to follow up on what Robin was just saying about that analysis on the objections. So we had talked about looking at three different things related to objections. So whether or not similar objections or objection grounds resulted in different outcomes. So issues or inconsistencies between objections. The two other things we discussed talking about or looking at were the outcomes in relation to the 2007 recommendations or the policy recommendations. And then the last thing was consistency or issues in the objections related to the criteria as defined in the applicant guidebook. So what staff tried to do is to not necessarily undertake this work, but to sort of set some, or I guess do some groundwork related to this this analysis to try to make us a little more focused and to maybe be able to do targeted research. So what we looked at, and so we actually put an Excel sheet, which I'll share after this meeting, but we looked at applications that had requests for reconsideration, which is sort of indicative of, you know, the participants in the objection having a distinct issue with the outcome in some form or fashion. The other thing that we looked at was objections where, at least on the surface, they're quite similar. So it could be on the same objection grounds. It could be on the same string. And then so what we wanted to see there is if there's a different outcome related to that similar situation. And so what we saw was in relation to the request for reconsideration, there is about 10% of the applications or actually of the objections that reached a decision. I think it was about 22 out of 208 objections that reached a decision ended up in request for reconsideration. And then as for the inconsistent results, that was a much lower percentage. It was about 1% or maybe even 2%. So there's four of those. So we set out on this work without having exactly a clear idea of what we're looking for. So this sort of follows along the discussion that was just had about it being very important to have the experiences of those that actually participate in objections to be able to provide us with firsthand experience of, you know, perhaps what went wrong, what things could be improved. And so without that, it makes it a little difficult for staff or anyone really to do this work because the scope of what needs to be done right now, as we understand it at least, is that every objection would need to be looked at, and then you need to try to identify issues in reviewing the objections. And so at least from a staff perspective, we're a bit leery of reviewing every objection without knowing exactly what to look for. So I guess the last thing I want to say about this is those statistics I shared about the request for reconsideration and then the sort of obvious inconsistencies, those relatively low numbers, I don't know if you can draw conclusions necessarily, but it could be perhaps indicative of issues related to objections not being quite as rampant or widespread as maybe the initial impression might be. So at this point, I think we're looking for guidance from the leadership, from the work track, to determine what the next steps might be. Is it to perhaps set up that open house? Is it to do a targeted outreach to participants in the objections to try to get us to a better place where we know what we are looking for? So essentially, we're looking for issues without having a hypothesis. So I think I'll turn it over back to Robin, but at least that's the way that staff sees it, and we're open to discussion and feedback on this topic. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much, Steve, and thanks for a lot of that preliminary work that you've already gotten done on this analysis. So let me open this up to the whole group here, and so I'm wondering how do folks feel about this, and you know, how deep down should we dig into this analysis, and you know, what kinds of issues should we be looking for? I think Steve has a pretty good point, you know, with respect to it's hard for him to try to just come up with hypotheses without hearing some feedback from others who participated in the process. So I think that, you know, this is one time when they're really looking for and in need of input from us, the community, and in particular those who are participating in these processes, to give us some idea about what they should be looking for and what kind of hypothesis should be tested for. Otherwise, you know, it's a little difficult to say. Anybody want to weigh in on this? I see Steve's got his hand up again. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. This is Steve again. And I forgot to make one last point about the analysis. So without having, as you just mentioned, having a hypothesis that we can test against, we're left with trying to do research and to critique outcomes that are completed by experts in the field, which, speaking for myself at least, and I think I can probably speak for Emily and Julie, we're not legal experts in these fields. So I'd be a bit dubious in, or I guess leery again, about us drawing conclusions and critiquing the outcomes of experts. It makes us a little bit concerned in doing something like that. But if we have something we can test against, if we're looking for something specific, that seems a little more data-driven and a little more appropriate for staff to conduct. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. I see Jeff Newman has his hand up. Please, Jeff, go ahead.
Thanks, Jeff Newman. And I'm not sure ultimately what the hypothesis is, other than I believe that in certain circumstances there may be inconsistent results in some of the types of objections due to the application of subjective factors that either were or were not contemplated when the ultimate standards were drafted for the guidebook. And I guess, like, what I equated to is, so in trademark law, at least, and in a while since I've practiced, so there's many more people that could probably correct the terminology I'm going to use. But there is a confusingly similar standard for trademark infringement. But even though you have that standard, there are certain tests that courts have developed over the years to determine specific factors that go into the analysis of determining whether something is confusingly similar. And I know that ICANN, when they were drafting the guidebook, either for the legal rights objections or even for the string similarity, they did not want to define it. They just wanted to leave it to the expert. So now that we've seen a round of these types of objections, is there a way to pull out certain common factors that were used by the evaluators in looking at these objections, and can we create some consistency in future subsequent procedures for when these types of objections come up? So, in other words, and I guess like Cheryl Langdon Orr says it right, you know, we have evidence of consistency or inconsistency, and is there a way to give guidance to future evaluators, you know, especially if we have thousands of CLD applications and there are multiple different evaluators for different types of objections or review. This applies also to similarity or similarity review. Community, all of that. So I guess, again, I don't really have hypothesis other than are there ways, based on the fact that we now have a number of cases under our belt, that we could pull out certain factors that were used to try to guide future value. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. No, that's really something that sort of came to my mind, too, when I first saw the tabulation earlier about, you know, that some of these cases did have inconsistencies in the final decision, and I just couldn't help but think to myself, oh, really, I want to know more, you know, what happened in these cases. And so, you know, at least as a starting point, if we can look at those cases where there are some inconsistencies, I think it would help us to at least get us started on this analysis. Alan, did you have your hand up? Did I misread that? Okay.
No, that just says I'm on the phone.
Okay, sorry about that. I thought I saw that. Okay, was there anybody else who wanted to get on the queue on this? Okay, I see in the chat, Christina's got a comment. For those objections for which the fees were variable, do we know what the high and low fees were, as well as the mean and the median? Good question. I certainly don't know the answer, but I bet we could track it down. Anyone have any thoughts on this? Any suggestions for this question? Okay, in the chat, John says that staff should get that info from the four providers. Okay, well, that would be helpful. Really, I think, you know, what we should be doing is information gathering, and the extent to which we can collect as much information about the experience that people had on this as possible is really the best use of what we can be doing right now. Okay, so anyone else want to get in the queue on this particular point, or shall we move on? Okay, I don't see anything further. So going back to some of our substantive discussions from last time, we talked about, first, the limited public interest objections, and we didn't really have a lot of major changes that were being called for, both with respect to the content and the function and the purpose of the policy stated in the guidebook, nor with the needs with regard to future implementation. So, you know, those seem to be okay and not really something that we needed to have a whole lot of major changes that were called for. With respect to the next issue, which is the ALAC standing issue, we had a good bit of discussion on that last week, and it really sounded like the at-large was going to be having some internal discussions on this very specific issue of their own, and that's a good starting point for us to pick up the discussion as well. One of the suggestions we had from last week, and I think is worth picking up again, is the suggestion of, do we either remove funding for the at-large, or do we remove standing for the at-large, or do we only fund when they otherwise have demonstrated standing? So I think this is another one of these issues that we might get a good bit of discussion about. So let me just... with that brief recap there, open up the queue and see if there are any thoughts about this issue, the ALAC standing issue. And I see we've got a queue forming, so Alan and then Jeff. Please, Alan, go ahead.
Thank you very much. After we had our discussion, I went back and actually read the judgments. And it turns out that I was semi-wrong in how I presented it. The judgment presumed standing and didn't really consider standing, but rejected the particular objections on other grounds. So it's not 100% clear if it had gone forward whether the standing would have been accepted or not. So I think if we go ahead and say we do want to maintain the ALAC ability to file an objection, then I think we want to make explicitly clear that they implicitly have standing like the independent objector. But it wasn't rejected out of hand. It was just said it was presumed or assumed there would be standing. I don't remember the exact wording. But I think if we go forward, we do want to make that point clear. But as I said, I will be discussing with the ALAC. We started it, and we'll get back. And I'm done.
Okay, thank you very much, Alan. Jeff, you have the floor.
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman, and I'm taking off any kind of leadership hat from this. This is completely my personal opinion. based on experience while at a former employer. This is not my former employer's view either. But I would have to say that I am strongly in opposition of giving the ALAC standing for any type of objection. I believe that there's just no accountability for to the ALAC if they were just granted standing plus granted funding. Plus, they're also susceptible to outside lobbying efforts to file. That was one of the most frustrating aspects of when I was responding to an ALAC complaint. It was, they had no one to answer to. They had, ICANN was paying their fees. And there was no repercussions if they filed a completely frivolous complaint. And so it would be the same thing with giving the GNSO an automatic right of standing for any type of complaint. So no accountability. And, I see John Nevitt's response on there saying the ALAC could work objections through the IO and they could try to play the IO to file if we do go with an independent objector in the future. But to give them automatic standing and or to give them funding, it doesn't work at all.
Thanks, Jeff. Alan, you have the floor, please.
Yeah, thank you. To be clear, as I said, we will discuss this. I strongly object to Jeff's reference to the term lobbying. As we discussed last time, yes, it was pointed out, the issue was raised with us by someone else who could have filed their own objection, perhaps, if they chose to. We carried it forward not because of anything like that, but simply because it had been brought to our attention. However, that notwithstanding, if Jeff is objecting to, and he certainly may, taking off his chair hat, objecting to formally granting standing, that's different from removing the function. My understanding of how we're approaching this whole process is that unless someone has made a specific case, and preferably doing it earlier on, that we not change the process we had unless we're trying to fix something. So thank you. I really
Thanks,
don't want
this Alan.
To become a debate between
the
two of us.
No, this is fine. This is the kind of discussion we need to have, so it's a good thing. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, and I do agree with Alan in the sense that we shouldn't change anything absent evidence of it being broken or not working, and that is sometimes cited as the Newman rule, or at least rule number two. Again, rule number is never hold a meeting during lunchtime unless you're prepared to serve. But that's that one for now. But Newman rule two is, yes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, or find evidence. So I have talked to my previous employer to see if they would be willing to put something in writing to the group. And so just as Alan's talking to ALAC, I'm talking to my previous employer. I know John Nevitt was part of an organization where the ALAC also filed. I don't know if Donuts is willing to put in some a statement or whatnot. And the third one, I don't remember where the third one filed again. John may be able to remember better than I. I know the one organization that it wasn't filed against, even though they applied for the same string, was Phileas. And so I'm not sure if they would be willing to make any kind of statement or not. But so I think I will work on them trying to get in their views on the record. Thanks.
Thanks very much. I do not see anyone else's hand up. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this issue? Sounds like we've got an issue to take that's real ripe to take to the list. Okay, well, I shall move forward then. If we don't have anyone further who wants to speak on the issue of ALAC standing, sounds like this remains up for question. Okay, so the next issue on the agenda does the process invite lobbying from third parties? And in our discussion last week, we talked about, you know, this is an issue that's really hard to prevent. It's difficult to know what the intent of somebody is. You know, the term lobbying and gaming can have somewhat of a pejorative term to them. And so one idea is maybe we're better off to try to improve the transparency with respect to this lobbying if it isn't something that we can eliminate or curtail entirely. Did anyone else have any further thoughts on this, on the process and inviting lobbying or the need for more transparency on this issue? I do not hear anyone or see any hands, although my whiteboard moved around. Yes.
Robin, this is Karen.
Go ahead.
I can't raise my hand because I just got kicked out of the room again. But I did want to just note that is one of the questions with regard to gaming that we had already sort of penciled in for CC2 to send out to the community. if anyone wants to change that or what, we'll be sending that out to the list later this week. But we did already previously pencil in a question for CC2 on does this process invite gaming? Thanks.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Jeff, is that a new hand?
Yes, thanks. I want to read Alan's statement into the record, and then I'll want to respond to it. So Alan says in the chat that the ALAC does not accept that. I think referring to no accountability. It says, moreover, we also considered very carefully whether filing such an objection implied any personal liability. In my mind, it is clear we did not do this frivolously. So, Alan, my response to that is my point is not that it was frivolously filed. It's just that the filing itself was frivolous and didn't have any basis in fact or in the grounds which the evaluator found clearly. And so, again, I don't think anyone, and I could just, again, put on my personal hat, nobody from my organization even gained a notion of whether to hold any one person or group of people personally liable. So that's not what I'm talking about with accountability. I guess my question for Alan is, what is the harm of ALAC ever filing any type of objection, right? I mean, so it loses. So what? It hasn't paid for anything. There's no personal stake or group stake in the filing of an objection. Whereas with every other organization, either that files an objection, either there could potentially be a loss of a lot of money, there could be a loss of reputation in terms of if a company has filed an objection, they answer to shareholders, et cetera. I just don't see what stake the ALAC has in any objection. I have no problem with the ALAC filing public comments like everyone else does. I have no comment or no problem with trying to write a letter to an independent objector to try to get them to file it. But you need someone with stake in the game, if you will, in order to in order to have an accountable process. And Aubrey says in the chat that money versus an amazing amount of volunteer time. Yeah, Aubrey, my point is on that, I would answer anyone that's got a personal vendetta or for whatever reason, personal interest is usually willing to volunteer a lot of time to write. And from what I noticed on the ALAC list, there was led by one or two individuals who had a, I'm not going to make any other accusations. I will let the evidence speak for itself when filed. So thank you. Again, personal opinion, not as a leader at all.
Thanks very much, Jeff. I see Alan's got his hand up. Alan, please go ahead, and let's try to keep it brief so we can meet our entire agenda. We've only got about 12 minutes left in the meeting. Thanks.
Given the length of the last intervention, I don't think I should be requested to keep it brief, but I will. First of all, I wasn't responding to Jeff. He typed that message in while I was typing. I was responding to Avery's comment saying, does the ALEC accept that we filed it frivolously? So I was not responding to his question. That's number one. Number two, Jeff can have his opinion, as can others, about stake in the game. The independent objector had no stake in the game other than he was given standing and money to file objections if he thought the overall public interest was at stake. The ALAC was given a similar ability to file objections if we believed there was potential user harm. Users are the ones that we speak on behalf of in ICANN. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Alan, did anybody else want to get on the queue on this issue? I don't see any hands or hear any voices. Okay, so it sounds like this is another issue that we need to continue with. We've got a diversity of viewpoints on how to handle lobbying of third parties and the extent to which it's appropriate and what kinds of transparency mechanisms are required. I hear a beeping. Can people hear me okay? Can people hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, sorry about that. I don't know what happened there. But it does sound like we've got a number of issues that folks are keen to continue to discuss and try to come up with some kind of mechanisms to make sure we've got accountability with respect to the filing of objections. It sounds like there's still some concern that we may need to put in some kinds of protections on that issue. Okay, so anyone else want to weigh in on this, or shall we move forward? All right, I don't see any hands or hear any voices. So the next issue on our agenda is the legal rights objections. The applicant guidebook principle G recommendation 3. And last time we went over some of the analysis that had been done both by INTA and by WIPO, and it didn't sound like there was a whole lot of controversy on those reports on the legal rights objections, and like there wasn't a whole lot of work that needed to be done in furtherance of those issues, but let me open it up again this time to see if there are any further comments on this issue. Anybody want to weigh in here on the legal rights objections? And we did have Paul McGrady the last meeting to discuss his proposal, but, yeah, it is a shame he's not here this time to discuss it again. Okay, I see we've got Jeff has his hand up. Please, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff. I'm sorry, I was about to drop my hand because you pretty much mentioned it. I think Paul submitted a proposal to the group that we probably should, as a group, analyze and evaluate. But that was the only particular one, or the only proposal I think we've received on the objection. So if we could kind of carve out some time when Paul's back in the country, hopefully maybe for the next call, or even maybe even we can do it on email, but I would love to hear more about what others think of Paul's proposal to add that other element on, because he does raise a good point in the sense of it's hard to show that someone's going to use a name in or use it in a confusingly similar manner because it hasn't been in use yet when the evaluator is making an evaluation. So that said, he also proposes a very specific criteria in what we may want to look for. Since his proposal is the only one we've received so far, I think we should at least spend some time evaluating the proposal.
Yes, thanks very much for that reminder, Jeff, on that proposal and some of the findings there. And we may want to consider the extent to which that use issue is a justifiable barrier or some of the other issues that have been raised there. Let's see if we can't, maybe in the next call, hopefully in the next call or before that, even on the list, since I don't think we meet for a couple more weeks. So since this was something that was proposed by him last month, maybe we could even get some robust discussion on the list going in the next couple of weeks rather than having to wait until the next call for that. Thanks for that reminder. Okay, did anyone else want to speak to that proposal? Other than that, it really didn't sound like there was a lot of recommendations for significant changes that needed to be made in the LROs specifically. We may feel differently once we've had a chance to look at the staff analysis in some detail, but, we really haven't had discussion of anything before this, so now would be a good time if anyone's got more issues to raise on the legal rights objections. All right, well, I don't see any hands or hear any voices, so let's move forward. And the next meeting for us is February the 7th at 1500 UTC. That's our Work Track 3 meeting. I see Karen has got her hand up, so please, Karen, you have the floor.
Thank you, Robin. I wanted to remind people, Aubrey, I believe, had sent out a note to the full work group last week with regard to a webinar that is being held on Wednesday on the community TLDs as it relates to human rights, which the drawing a blank right now, the European Council Commission on Human Rights during the time that everyone was in Hyderabad. That will come into play as we get into community objections. If you can't attend that, Jeff is saying in the chat that webinar is being recorded. I would encourage you to listen to it at some point so that can inform our discussions further down the line. And the other thing was that we will be sending out in the next day or two a recap of what we have noted so far for CC2 questions. We have in order to meet our timeline, we need to get these wrapped up within our work group so that we can present it to the full work group by the end of the month. So we really need some good discussion on the list. And if we don't have that on the list, we may call for another meeting the last week of the month, the first week of February, it's a split week, so that we can get some consensus on what we want our CC2 questions to be. So those are my two reminders. Thanks, Robin.
Thanks very much, Karen, and I like that. Please, people, take notes. If we don't get participation on the list on these issues, we're calling another meeting. And, you know, so come on. Okay, so let me go forward. I think the only thing left on our agenda is any other business. So did anybody have any other business they wanted to add to this? All right, well, I don't see any hands or hear any voices, so I guess that wraps it up. And thank you all for joining in the call. I very much appreciate your participation and attention on this, at least in the United States, a holiday. So thank you very much, and goodbye.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned.